meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey everybody, and welcome to TGIF. Again, TGIF. Yay. Thank God it's Friday. We got a first week of November. Today's the sixth day of November, so that means we're already 1 week into November. Can you believe it?
How fast it
goes.
We just said that.
We're almost at Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas is around the corner.
It is.
Well, Thanksgiving is almost here.
Yeah. I agree.
I love Thanksgiving. This is a nice time of year, though.
Yes.
So, and the warm weather has said goodbye.
It's maybe gone. For a little bit.
Maybe for a little bit.
You never
bit.
Know.
So.
Chicago for you.
No, the last few days has been, it's been really
nice.
Gorgeous.
Yes.
Just gorgeous.
Like Father Edmund used to say, he's gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Just gorgeous. Like spring. So anyway, how are you guys doing?
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah. Great. Who
Why?
Doesn't?
Why? What's going to
happen?
Because
it's the weekend.
Because it's the weekend.
So well, I'll be, even though I'll be working, but that's okay.
It's always working.
For me, it's always a working weekend.
Especially the weekend.
Well, no, some people think we only work
on
Sundays,
Sunday.
You know,
I know.
Priests.
Mm-hmm. And after you finish
what do you
with doing? Mass, that's
well, what's
it.
What's he doing all week?
Oh, fooling around.
It's just different. It's a different intensity.
Yes.
During life is intense.
Yes, it is.
Life, I love the, who are these? Where have they come from, all these dressed in white?
The drama.
the elder from the heavens said to John, and John said, well, sir, you...
Well, hello. You're asking me.
No. You're asking me. You know better than I. Says, these are the ones who've survived the time of distress, the time of trial and tribulation, the time of persecution. They've been washed in the blood of the Lamb. Life is trial and tribulation, isn't it?
Oh yes.
Life is good. Life is good, but it's trial and tribulation.
It is very challenging. Life is beautiful.
Distress.
Yeah.
No, I was reading the other day, too, that even families are just completely stressed out. Children are stressed out. Children are angry. They're angry. At what?
I
ask you what?
Everything.
Everything.
No, the unsettled state of everything. Everything is unsettled.
That's right, unsettled.
Yes.
I was reading I didn't bring it with me. Yeah, this is interesting. You mentioned that. I actually had this other article, but Peggy Noonan, she's a commentator. I don't know for the Washington. I don't know who is Tony. Tony.
Looking at Armin.
Who's she with?
She used to be a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan, and she is also a contributor to Fox News.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I was reading an article. And she talked about, she was writing about the contrasting her childhood to what is the situation today.
Wow.
And she said that the bottom line is there's no stability. America has lost its stability. Young people experience instability. Even the family, you know, the breakup of the family.
I think you might say especially in the family. Because that's where there was stability.
That's where there was stability.
Before.
Yeah.
I was telling Jerry this morning that, I guess with Armin too, that yesterday in the evening, I went home and my brother called my parents and said, "Where are you?" "Well, we're on our way back with hot dogs. Uh-huh. We're going to eat together. And I love eating together as a family. Sure. I miss those days. Yeah. When we were children, we ate as a family every mm-hmm. day, and especially Sundays, but every day in the evening, my father would come to work and my mom would have the meal. And we had a nice family dinner last night, and I was so happy just to be there with them.
Isn't it nice?
It is. I miss mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. I tell you, that I'm an old-fashioned type. I really am. You know, I truly believe, I mean, it's fine that women work and all that, and they're, you know, mm-hmm. but there's something about having mom at home. You know, yes. when we were kids and, mm-hmm. you know, you go home and you smell the dinner cooking, you yes. know, there's just a, talk about a stability, but mm-hmm. yeah, you know, just the gathering around the yes. table.
It's very wholesome.
It's just.
That's how it.
Good.
It is. It's good. We need each other, and to have that stability, it just, in the mid, even though you may, let's say you had a bad day at work, I didn't, but I'm just saying. Just to be home and in the company of yeah. of your family, your mm-hmm. loved ones, that's truly a gift.
The whole ritual in Italy, certainly it's in Italy, and I it might be in Latin America as well. I'm not sure, and I don't know that it was if it really ever was here in the United States. We've talked about this before, but at the midday, the meal at midday, mm-hmm. it's meant to go on mm-hmm. for. For sometimes you have the siesta, but there's no rush, mm-hmm. you know. You gather around the table and you spend an hour, 2 hours, maybe even 3 hours. Nobody's in a hurry to go away, you yes. know. But even I remember as we were growing up, I don't recall that we ever watched the television while we were eating. Mm-hmm. I mean, once in a blue moon we'd have our TV tables. What do you got? Those little TV. Remember those little TV
sure.
tables? Yeah.
Sure.
And maybe it was. Maybe perhaps it was a special movie or something. That of course mm-hmm. in those days you only had three channels, and it was always the those Walt Disney specials like Peter Pan, and I remember that one. We were invited to neighbors who had a color TV. I can't believe in my day we didn't have black. When I was really, there was a point when we only had black and white.
You know, in my day, there was none.
There was no television.
No.
But you gather around the radio, right?
Oh, sure. On the radio.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. with great imaginations,
sure.
yes.
you could really project your ideas.
I tell you, I didn't realize that until, and quite honestly, I don't have TV. I've got the internet because I've got unfortunately, I've got to download information, you know. And there's a great grace. I mean, we have access to all kind of information. But some years ago, I was, when I was at St. Hyacinth, so really going back some years, this is before the computers, really. It was in the 19... When did the computers really come into... When I was a seminarian, we would do our reports. Mm-hmm. That was the beginning. We had one computer in the seminary. We would all use that to write our reports. Maybe we had one or two computers, but nobody had a private computer. No, in those days, nobody did. That was in the 1980s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when did the computer really come into...
the mainstream, right?
Yeah. Like as we see it now, as we use it now. Because I didn't have... It's only been... I think I...
Probably in the...
Bought my first computer in 2007 or 2008.
Would it have been in the 90s or late 80s?
I would think the
90s. The 90s, yeah.
They were just coming out as mm-hmm. in people were, but it
how
got
quickly,
crazy.
How yeah, quickly it that happened.
Before
huh?
it came personal. Everyone mm-hmm. has it.
Today, everybody, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have one until right before. I was late getting a computer, remember that. Because I didn't
late
think I needed
getting
it.
Getting everything personally.
I can't even imagine, you know, life without a computer, you know. Could do without, but can you do without? Yes, you could.
You can. Mm-hmm. You
there's still people that, this day and age, that they don't have a computer.
Nope.
Like the people
with Geraldine.
I got rid of mine.
You got rid of yours.
5 years ago.
Good for you.
Yeah.
And you're just as angry now as you were then.
Huh? Or charming.
Or charming. Or charming. What was the point that I was going to make about that?
About the computers?
Oh, no. One evening, this is before the computers, and I didn't have a television in my room, you know, as my first years in a priesthood. I didn't have a TV. We had one television mm-hmm. in the common room, and I was never there. When I think about it, I never watched TV when I was the first 6 years of my priesthood because I didn't have a television. Then when I came here, then I had a television in my own room, and that lasted only a few years, and then I got rid of it. I decided I didn't want a TV because it was a distraction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was a distraction, so I...
There was only one here in the kitchen.
There was one in the kitchen, right.
We used to watch with Rose.
With Rose.
For lunch, and that was the news. That was...
The news, and it was the news.
That was just the news, yeah.
But I remember I turned the radio on, and just happened to... Because prior to that time, this is in probably around 1986... prior to that time, if I listened to the radio, I listened to music, right? Mm-hmm. But I happened to one evening, it was I think a Sunday evening or a Saturday evening, I happened to turn the radio on, and I don't know if I was flipping through the stations or whatever, but I found a talk radio. It was talk radio, and it was a story. It was a short story.
Mm-hmm.
I was mesmerized. I was never so relaxed and so engrossed and so visual at the same time. You know, you could imagine the way it was told. It was so beautiful, and I think if I had seen it on television today, if I saw the same story on television, I think it would have lost something.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something about talk radio, about the telling stories over via the radio.
That reminds me of when you tell your Christmas stories.
Oh, yes.
I love that.
Yeah. Sure.
That's really great.
Yeah, that's coming up, isn't it?
I know.
Yes.
It finds some new ones.
It's been a whole year?
Yeah.
Yep.
Goes so
unbelievable.
Fast.
Unbelievable.
But no, and see, the thing about television, the thing about the computer, and the phone, I just don't carry the phone around. I will not do it unless I absolutely have to for some reason, but I don't carry the phone around. In fact, I rarely use it. But the, what was I going to say? Oh, but the glare, the light, that glare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why even with the computer, generally, I don't, after I have Mass at 7 o'clock, the computer's gone, it's off before that 7 o'clock Mass.
Mm-hmm.
So after I have confessions, I'll come back around 6 o'clock, 6:10, back into my office. So I've got that time between 6 o'clock until... 7 o'clock. I try to take a little bit of time for private prayer as well during that time. Mm-hmm. But I'll check emails and see what's going on in the news and all that. Mm-hmm. But that's it. After that, it's rare that I would go back to it after the Mass. Because I don't like the glare. I don't like
and
that
it
light.
Does affect the eyesight, Father. Because ever since I started using a computer, that's why I need glasses.
No, I hate to say this, Christina, but. It's not the computer.
Yes, no. You know why I say that? Because a lot of the young people need glasses to see far. I could see up close, and with the older people, it could be both. But you could, like my parents, because of age, they can't see up close. They need glasses, reading glasses. There's something about the
But what's your situation now? I mean, what is it that you couldn't see close up, or because that's pretty close?
No, I can't see far. I can't see far.
And the
computer
did that. To your eyes?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I honestly believe that.
Could be, maybe.
Because I was fine before I started using the computer. Father, how long have I been here?
It's been a while. It's been a long time.
It's 18 years.
Well, that's the point I was trying to make, is there comes a point in your life.
Yeah, no, but it's that, because I don't need reading glasses. I can read perfectly fine.
Yeah, for right now.
I still need glasses to see far.
Okay,
that's the point I'm trying to make.
I see. Okay, I get the point. I get the point.
You know what I'm saying?
I pushed myself to 50 before I started wearing reading glasses. Mm-hmm. I really pushed it, because I knew that things are starting to get a little bit blurry. You know, reading.
Mm-hmm.
This is no way. I'm not going to be wearing. I'm not going to be one of those wearing glasses. You know.
Oh, you stretched that out.
I did stretch it out.
Yes, you did.
And people knew. Because they started saying, "Do you think you might need some glasses? You think you might need glasses up there as I'm at the Mass, or I'm reading the Gospel and I'm trying to."
Obvious at one point, Father. It was dark. Remember the Holy Saturday? That was that one Holy Saturday.
Yeah.
That the lights were off and you had the flashlight, but you couldn't see it.
Yeah,
you could not see, and you were trying to chant the prayer, and it's like you could.
I remember.
Yes.
But I watched all these other people my age. They were going down. All of a sudden, the glasses were coming on. It's amazing when you see
that. It's not going to happen to me.
It did, exactly. But
the thing is, I've been wearing them since I'm 2 years old.
Well,
and
really?
I'm very grateful that I had parents who paid attention.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I would have been the dumb kid in first grade, the dumb kid in second grade, who couldn't see the board.
Yeah, right.
Without glasses, so.
But you were the smartest one, right?
I was, actually.
She was, yeah.
She was.
And humble.
She's just being honest.
Yes.
Because that you, because you, you, your favorite book was The Dictionary,
I remember you said. I loved it.
Weird. Anyway, so that's okay.
No, Jerry's a walking encyclopedia.
She is. Yeah.
Ask Jerry.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. Since we've, this has been really some very good content for the first 15 minutes, right?
It's life.
Very deep stuff, I think, you know. So deep, I think it's thoughts. Time to take a break, you know, okay. So we can get a breath of fresh air and maybe get into something a little bit more substantial, a little bit more serious.
Yes.
So, but anyway, we could do without the computer, maybe. We could. Maybe, maybe not.
I wish I could.
Anyway, we'll take a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Father Anthony. You're listening to listener supported Winds of Change in AM 750 WNDZ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com. St. Stanislaus Kostka is the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. As Christ said to Sister Faustina, mankind will not have peace until it turns with trust to my mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka hosts the opening celebration of the Jubilee Year of Mercy on Sunday, December 6th from 2 until 5 p.m. There will be a rosary and Divine Mercy chaplet as well as confessions. Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, will explain the role of St. Stan's as a sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in celebrating the special Jubilee Year of Mercy. Reverend Francis Hoffman will explain the role of the laity in the Year of Mercy. Rich Wenzel from Divine Mercy 33 will explain the mission of Divine Mercy 33 in the Year of Mercy. He will explain outdoor Divine Mercy images, inviting and welcoming all to share in God's mercy. There'll also be a reception and question and answer session in St. Stanislaus Kostka's Church Hall. That's Sunday, December 6th from 2 until 5 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. For more information, go to sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. You know, this week we've been listening to Paul in his letter to the Romans, and also today's gospel was taken from the Gospel of Luke. But the thing that struck me this past week are, you know, how things kind of catch you something affects you, you know, you hear something and it just kind of grabs you and you say, wow. And I guess I kept hearing this urgency about authenticity. In other words, Jesus calling us to be disciples, where we hold nothing back, but we give ourselves completely over to Him. And that's truly the whole of the gospel message. It's not that we live our faith on Sunday or that we consider ourselves, you know, certainly Catholics or Christians when we're making our prayers or doing our prayers or saying our prayers, but that this living constantly, conscious, which is a question I guess I have for all of you, is are we consciously conscious of who we are as Christians, as Catholics? The readings, certainly this week, from Paul's letter to the Romans and the various Gospels we've been reading, for some reason this, or maybe it's that coupled with the fact that I look at what's going on all around us and, yeah, just instability, as you mentioned, Geraldine, instability, confusion.
Yeah.
And people know it. People know it. And yet it seems that there are these forces out there, outside and within the church as well, that seem to want to perpetuate this confusion. It's almost as if, and sometimes you'd think even within the church, that there are those who would be just fine with relativism. In other words, you know, just kind of whatever you think it should be, it that's what it is, you know?
Yeah.
That there's almost as if there's no truth. I was reading commentary out. This is from one of the British papers. I don't even have the title of the article. I just printed out the article without the title and without the name of the person. But this is speaking about Great Britain, that I think it's entitled Christians Are Afraid of Their Own Shadow. But a good point that she makes, she says that Britain must be the laughing stock of any fundamentalist Islamist who hopes one day to wipe Christianity from the face of the world. We need never fear having our freedom, religion, or heritage taken from us because we are too busy giving it away as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm.
So hopelessly confused have we become that too many can no longer tell the difference between respecting other people's faiths and customs and surrendering our own. And I think as she's writing for the people of Great Britain, I think the same can be said for much in many parts of our own country. But she was making reference to a cross that was removed in a town in England. And there's many reports of these kinds of things, by the way, but this just happens to be one of them. The cross was removed from a crematorium in case it offended those of other faiths.
Ugh.
And she says, can anyone imagine the uproar if a Christian were to ask for the removal of a religious symbol belonging to another faith?
Mm-hmm.
She said, this is a Christian country built by Christians, its history and literature formed by Christianity, and its ceremonies of state based on Christian observance. Now, it has an established church, and Christianity is still the religion of the majority. Why should it remove crosses from anything at all? It's a question. She's mm-hmm. speaking in Great Britain, in England. And there was a pronouncement. She says, now in an even dottier pronouncement, is it dottier, dottier, dottier?
Dottier.
Dottier pronouncement. Never used that word before. What does that mean, dottier pronouncement?
Cuckoo.
Cuckoo? Crazy. I've never heard that. Have you heard that before?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you grew up reading the dictionary, sure. Have you ever heard? I've never heard that before,
no,
dottier.
Mm-hmm.
Now in an even dottier pronouncement, a professor of faith, in public policy at Goldsmiths, University of London, says that we shouldn't heat up sausage rolls in the office microwave in case we offend the religious sensibilities of others.
Oh, stop it.
Well, please. That's what she said. So, professor, she says, can a vegetarian insist on a ban on all meat?
Yeah.
Tony,
yeah,
you know?
I'm with that.
those who support animal welfare, a ban on halal products, actually reports, if reports are accurate, his guidance probably means just that. She says, now I'm a Catholic who does not eat meat on Fridays, but does that mean, but that does not confer a right to object to someone else heating up a burger in the kitchen?
No.
She says, what kind of a joyless world are we creating?
Mm-hmm.
Joyless. She says, we tread too carefully. Now, she says she was once invited out to lunch by a Jewish lady, and as she was paying, she thought, she thought it would be rude to order the very mouth-watering pork that she wanted so bad. So instead, so as not to offend the Jewish woman, she ordered lamb instead.
Mm.
But when it came to her own order, the Jewish woman chose pork. So, how about that?
She didn't want to offend the other lady either.
Yeah.
And the other one really didn't like lamb at all.
Yeah. But she said, you know, we're so terrified. We're so terrified of upsetting people that a serviceman in uniform can be turned away from a hospital. You know, and in some places, if you say God bless, you can be demoted with a 40% pay cut.
Ugh, that's ridiculous.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. A man can be demoted with a 40% pay cut just for opposing gay marriage on his personal Facebook page. So she said, Great Britain is turning into a nation of cringers, afraid of their own shadows.
Mm-hmm.
She said, we got to fight back and fight hard. And so the citizens of this town, Accrington in England, where the crematorium, where the crosses were removed so as not to offend people of other faiths, the people pushed back. They pushed back, thank God. And they said no. So the crosses were reinstated. She says, we got to push back. I think it's true. I think it's true.
Sure.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I have a friend, well, actually a friend of a friend, who drives for Uber, and he had two Muslim, quote unquote, gentlemen in the back seat of his car, and he is a Byzantine Catholic. And has the Byzantine cross on his dashboard. Well, while he was driving these two gentlemen, they asked him to cover the cross.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
I hear this more and more.
And so the driver pulled over. He's an ex-Marine Special Forces recon soldier. And he says, this is my faith, and I will express it in America the way it should be. And if it offends you, get out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
And he says, and if you won't, I'll kindly remove you.
Nice.
Good for him.
That's you hear this. When you hear it, you think, is this real? Is this for real? But it is for real.
Mm-hmm.
It is, unfortunately.
This is what's happening. It's really bizarre. We live in a bizarre, we live in a upside down, bizarre world.
People really don't want to say what they believe in either. They want to just please everybody they're gutless. We are too many gutless people going around.
Well, we're just so intimidated by political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yes. That there's this, you're so, it's not just that you don't, because nobody wants to offend anybody,
no.
But people are going to be offended, and it's their problem if it's something as simple as,
right.
You know, that I display a cross in my car, my automobile, or on my, in my home or whatever it might be. There are it's to the point of ridiculous. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. I think it's just the point of ridiculous.
Yeah. Or even when we went to my aunt, my mom's sister, she converted. She's Protestant. Grew up Catholic, but now she's Protestant. And the times that we've got, she's never said anything to me, but I remember my grandmother, she always wore the image of Our Lady or the crucifix, as she would say, can you please cover that? You know, and my grandma said, this is my faith, which was your faith, but you went ahead, fine. But you will respect my faith. And I will not, to please you, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm almost tempted to tell a little story that I had too, but I don't want to offend. I don't want to offend.
No.
But no, it was just one of those, I was in a very interesting situation where I was introduced to some people who happened to be Muslim, and it was like I was a disease, I was in the Roman collar, and and I went out, naturally we go out to shake people's hands and
sure.
You know, to greet them and all that. They were visibly offended that I reached out to shake their hands and pulled away as if I was a leper,
mm-hmm.
as if I was
yes.
Going to contaminate them, and that's no exaggeration. And I respect it. You know, I showed mm-hmm. utmost respect at that point. Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be offensive, but really, it's to the point of being ridiculous. But again, I go back to these readings, the urgency for authentic Christianity, that mm-hmm. we be unapologetically Christian. Now, and I tell you, to be as this woman is speaking about Great Britain as being a Christian country built by Christians, mm-hmm. its history and literature formed by Christianity. You know, I think I mentioned perhaps at the Mass this morning. I don't remember if it was at this Mass this morning, but I believe it was that, or maybe it was yesterday. But the yes, there's things that happen, bad things that happen, and Christians do bad things. Jesus, I always go back to what Jesus said about, I never, when I first heard this in the gospel, and this was in the midst of a lot of the scandals going on in the church, and I found great consolation in the words of Christ, who said, you're not going to avoid scandals. They're always going to be there. They're always going to be there. I think I mentioned this morning, Geraldine, didn't I? I said that Jesus had 12 apostles.
Yes.
And one of them, Judas Iscariot, betrayed him with a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And his life ended in despair, Judas Iscariot. Peter denied three times that he knew the Lord. And then the others, you know, we see in the scriptures where they're competing with each other. They're arguing among themselves, you know, who's going to get the better place or the first place or what's in it for us and and all this. And so I say, if we can take every 12 individuals, and among the 12, there's one who's going to betray, one who's going to deny, others are going to, I mean, you get the point. The point is that if we look back into history, we can focus on all the negative stuff, all the dark things, all the bad things that have happened in the name of Christ, that ways of behaving or ways of whatever was really contrary to the truth of who Christ is and the plan that he's laid out for us and the gospel message. We can focus on that. And then we do a disservice to the great good that has been done throughout history as the church has built civilization, Christian civilization, that is truly universal.
Right.
Truly universal. The great beauty of how God works in and through imperfect people, sinful people, people who have their own ego, their own pride, their own agendas. I mean, how hard it is, really, when you think about it. I know that I struggle with this all the time. I get very angry with this or that or whatever. Like I have issues with the Pope sometimes, you know, many times, depends on what he says. But, and I have to bring it before God in prayer so that I don't, you know, go on a tirade or start, you know, I'm trying to understand how the Spirit is working through the church. And I don't have to understand everything. I just have to stay with the teachings of the church and the gospel message. And stay very close to Christ in the sacraments and in through personal prayer, and I'll be okay. I know that. I have to remind myself that every day. But this almost a seemingly allergic reaction we have to our own identity as Christians, I say generally speaking, that's not in all cases, but it seems to be the kind of the in thing today, doesn't it seem?
Too many things are the in thing. There's a desire to build up certain people based on nothing, glorify them, make them be a big hero, and everybody is supposed to just worship at their shrine. And I guess it has to do with how many hits there are on all these things that I don't know anything about.
Well, it's the power of the media, really, isn't it?
Oh, it's disgusting. Mm-hmm. So we build up somebody who is really not very good, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
But we idolize them. And then we want to tear everything else down. Anything that has meaning, anything that is worthwhile, let's rip it all down, tear it apart, and then we're all equal. We're a pile of baloney on the ground there. We don't know or believe in anything. So it gets extended to the world of religion and believing in good things because we want to tear everything down. Just tear it down.
Why is it?
I have no idea. I think partly it's the junk that's on television, all these stupid reality shows, all these things that pretend to be real and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
It has got everybody churned up, And they are thinking, well, there's nothing good in the world. There's nothing good. It's all terrible. We can't believe in anything. Therefore, we can do whatever we want to do, and we'll be okay. It's a very negative world that we live in. I can't stand it.
So do we feed into that? Do we?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so because...
Go ahead.
No, I just... Go on, Father.
No, I just want... I wonder if... I ask myself this all the time because I feel like I'm always reacting to what's happening, the negative stuff that's going on all around me because it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Sure, it's powerful.
It's so powerful. You can't... I mean, I deal with people all the time and I see the horrible tragedy that doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be, whether it be the breakup of a marriage, whether it be the division within the family,
right?
Children who are, I mean, you know, just like we were looking at this yesterday, Christine and I were looking at it. There was a, and I'm not, you know, this isn't about Trump. I'm not going to get into the whole political stuff here at all, but. It's a circus. It seems like it's more and more a circus. Mm-hmm. Just like even sometimes the way the media and it is a, sometimes I think, you know, even the Vatican, you know, the all the stuff, the guy, it just it becomes almost circus-like, you know. There's just all this. And that's where you've got to just bring it before the Lord in prayer and just say, you know, we've got, the plan has been laid out. This is the truth. This is the gospel. These are the teachings of the church. We have the Catechism of the Catholic Church. We have the Bible, magisterial teaching. And, you know, if we're going to get caught up in these, I don't know, but the fear is, you know, where's it going to go? Where's it going to go? But we were watching yesterday this video, what was it called? Latinos 2016, what was that?
2016.
But the point, it was a video. It's kind of gone viral, I think, hasn't it? And it's children. Now, I work with Hispanic, Latino people, and I have all my priesthood. And this video does such a disservice to the Latin American community, to the people that I certainly work with, the people that I've been walking with, basically, and serving for 30 years of my life. This is frightening to me, and I was very angry because... It's out there, and it feeds the negative narrative that's being
pushed all over the place.
Fomented, pushed all over the place. But it is vulgar. These are children.
Yes,
these are Latino children, Latin American children, Mexican children, and the vulgarity. And I mean, it's sickening. Mm-hmm. It's sickening. It's vulgar. It's sickening. But it's terribly embarrassing, and it does a great, 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 horrible disservice to the Latin American community. Mm-hmm. And this video was done as a protest against Donald Trump. You know,
when I saw the video, Father, I was disgusted as a Latina and Mexican. It really disgusted me because. Like you said, it does a disservice to the community. And then what are you doing? You're proving the point. Whatever, until this day, I didn't hear what he said, but you're proving him right. And it angers me because then people are going to think we're all the same. And that's not true. And just to see the way, it's like two, like in the gospel, how do you combat evil? By doing good. Two negatives don't make a positive. And this is negative. It's going to backfire.
Yeah, it all begins with the whole Donald Trump speaking about the need to protect the borders. Now, what country doesn't protect its borders?
Right.
And he was making a point about, you know, the drug cartel and the violence and stuff that comes the across the border.
Now,
and so there immediately, because it happens to be the Mexican border, you know, that was... Mm-hmm. Mexican people got really upset and all that. But if we look at it from an objective point of view, and just aside from this man who you know, speaks his mind, he speaks his mind. But there's a there's a truth that if we can be objective about it and say, okay, but, you know, yeah, certainly the church has no borders, and we serve all people, right? We accommodate in many ways. I've learned the language, right, so as to accommodate, so as to serve the people in the Latin American community. And this, anyway, to make but this something like that just angers me to no end because it completely, it's out there. Mm-hmm. It's out there. And I happen to be walking down Wacker Drive, and as I was coming toward the, along the river, this was midsummer, and I saw two young people, Mexicans, probably in their late teens, early 20s, maybe. And they were doing something really vulgar in front of the Trump Tower. And but I tell you, just my blood began to boil, not because of Trump, because of who they were. And I knew it because I felt like a father all of a sudden. And I said, I'm not going to, I was biting my tongue. I'm not going to say anything because I was really angry. And I just kept walking, and I was just, I was angry. I was very angry. And then I happened to, I was coming back, and they were coming, our paths crossed, and I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist. And I, and in Spanish, I told them, I says, you know, this is wrong. What you're doing is very, very wrong. Now, they were shocked, first of all, that I was speaking Spanish, you know, because...
Because you're not Latino.
I'm not Latino. I was born in Panama, but I'm not Latino, no? Latino. And so they, but I said, no, I said, this is wrong. What you're doing is wrong. I said, do you realize who you represent? I said, regardless of what you, you know, what he may say, what, and I don't want to get into the whole, but,
sure.
But they were visibly upset, embarrassed that I called them out on this.
Good.
And then as we got into the conversation, and they were trying to explain, you know, no, we're not against all the white people and all that. I said, it's not about that.
No,
it's not about that. He says, and they said, well, no, we say there's racism isn't with the whites, with the they said with the African American. I says, no, the racism's everywhere. I says, there's racism in African Americans. There's racism in white. There's racism in Latinos and Mexicans. The racism is a given. Unfortunately, it's part of the sinful nature that is inherent in many people. But I said it's not about you having to defend yourselves against me being white. But I said it's what how you misrepresent your own people, how you diminish your own people. And then I says, you know, I've worked with Mexicans, with Latinos all my life, or at least my adult life. And then I finally told them I was a priest. And they were visibly embarrassed. And they knew that what I said was true. And that they were just simply reacting, but not using their head, not thinking in an objective way, but it was all a reaction to much of what is being fed by the media.
You know, the media.
And this video is, I just feel like every Mexican, every Latin American, everybody should see that because they have to say, no, this has got to stop. This is not who we are. This is not who we are. Children. The vulgarity. I can't even say the words of vulgarity.
It was unbelievable. Very vulgar. And the name calling and the vulgarity, children. The innocent. They're using the innocent. That's how the devil works.
The manipulation of the children. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're diminishing them and their innocence. We will do away with it. There is no innocence in the world, and we can prove it because look at what the words are coming out of their mouths. I know those words, but that's ridiculous.
No, it's very sick, very sad. All right, with that, we're going to take a break. We got to take a break, and we will be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listen Support of Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. As Christ said to Sister Faustina, mankind will not have peace until it turns with trust to my mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka hosts the opening celebration of the Jubilee Year of Mercy on Sunday, December 6th from 2 until 5 p.m. There will be a rosary and Divine Mercy chaplet, as well as confessions. Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, will explain the role of St. Stan's as a sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in celebrating the special Jubilee Year of Mercy. Reverend Francis Hoffman will explain the role of the laity in the Year of Mercy. Rich Wenzel from Divine Mercy 33 will explain the mission of Divine Mercy 33 in the Year of Mercy. He will explain outdoor Divine Mercy images, inviting and welcoming all to share in God's mercy. There'll also be a reception and question and answer session in St. Stanislaus Kostka's Church Hall. That's Sunday, December 6th from 2 until 5 p.m. at St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. For more information, go to sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org. That's sanctuaryofthedivinemercy.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us. I don't know how we got into all that, but I guess I go back to what I've been reading in the scripture through this week and at Mass, this urgency, because if you feel the urgency for a reawakening, you know, a return to humility. It just seems to me we've lost our fear of God.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning of wisdom. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. You know, one of the readings, I think it was yesterday, I believe, Paul in his letter to the Romans, he reminds the people, he says, brothers, he says, and sisters, he says, none of us lives for oneself. No one, none of us lives for oneself, and no one dies for oneself. For if we live for the Lord, and if we die, we die for the Lord. So then, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's. We're not ourselves. We don't belong to ourselves. We belong to God. We come from God, we go to God, and God we live. And for this is why Christ died and came to life, that he might be Lord of both the dead and the living. So he says, why then do you judge your brother or your sister? Or you who do, or you, why do you look down on your brother or sister? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of God. For it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bend before me, and every tongue shall give praise to God. So then, each of us shall give an account of himself to God. Now, you just think about that.
Yeah.
That this is our faith, we believe this, it's in the creed, right? It's in the creed. He will come to judge the living and the dead. Do we think about, you know, what are we going to say for ourselves on the day of judgment? But see, it seems to me we live as if we're not going to, there's going to be no judge.
Right.
Like the Pope said, who am I to judge? Mm-hmm. And people just went wild with that. And they keep going back to that, even though it was taken out of context.
Yes.
And in some ways, I think he kind of foolishly said that because he's the Pope. He's the head of the church.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one has to be a little bit more prudent, a little bit more careful. You know, that's, I believe that that's his, you know, if I can point out one of his defects, one of them, it's lack of prudence. I really believe there's a lack of prudence there. You know, it's different when you're talking to your, like we're talking among ourselves, although we're talking into radio land. But, but you know, it's one thing. But when you're the head of the church, when you're the vicar of Christ, the successor of Peter, you know, be careful. Be careful, because everybody's holding on to those words, and they're going to use it for good or for bad,
right.
You know? I mean, many people like that about him, you know, that he's very, you know, we don't going to get into the whole thing with the Holy Father, but we're going to be judged. You know, somebody has to judge, and there has to be a truth. There has to be a truth. So, see, if we live in with this idea that it's all relative, you know, and this is pretty much... well, I shouldn't even say that this is pretty much what's become the law of the land, because there are certain things you simply can't do, you can't say, because political correctness has become the ultimate judge, right, of the person, if that makes any sense, you know. In other words, but if we really look at truth, as God is truth, and we come from God. Now, if we don't believe that, well, then, you know, everything is up for grabs. right? And so if we've renounced or we've repudiated, we've rejected our Judeo-Christian foundation, and we say, you know, enough of this already, you know, that was for our ancestors or our parents or our grandparents or our great-grandparents, but, you know, this is the third millennium. We are enlightened. We have evolved. We have progressed, because that's the big, those are the words that are being thrown out there all the time. You know, this is, we're progressive. We're a progressive people. Even St. Paul warns against that, by the way, in one of his letters. He says, be careful for those who think they're so progressive.
Yeah.
Because progressive means we've made progress, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have we really made progress?
No.
What do you mean, no?
People would like to believe that we're all weak-minded today. And they say, no, you have to go beyond that. You got to think for yourself. But they mean, think whatever you want to think. And make sure you're tearing something else down at the same time.
Or think what we want you to think.
Or think what we want you to think.
That's more like it.
I always go to, when I was in, going back, gosh, sometimes in the, when I was in the university, and there's dialogue. Everything is dialogue.
But
at some point I came to realize there's no dialogue. It's, you dialogue so long as you agree with me, you know?
Right. And once you start agreeing, then dialogue is done. Then we're done. That's not the way it works.
I remember I was at a meeting, and there was, it was among religious sisters, and some of the, and religious men consecrated in the consecrated life. And this was during the time when there was all this, the women's liberation and, you know, women this and women that, women should be priests and women, all that stuff. And somebody, they were going on and on about this. And I, you know, raised my hand and I went, and I forgot what it was I said, but I was saying, you know, something to counter this. And when I got home, I was ripped to shreds for, you know, stating my opinion. It's just what makes you think you have the right to say that? I said, I thought this was a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was a dialogue.
Yes.
You know, but no, it's a monologue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got it. You believe what we believe.
And then they say they're very tolerant, but once you disagree, oh, who's the intolerant one? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's on now.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. But really, it goes back to this authenticity in the faith and humility, because we recognize certainly before God that we are, if we really stand in God's light, we're aware of our own darkness. And that's, I think, maybe why we're reluctant to speak so often, because we know that we don't have the answers. Or we know that, I was raised, you just assume that, well, you got to defer to the authorities, the teachers and the professors and the priests, and they know what they're talking about. They know, but then it's not the case.
No, it's
not the case. There's got to be proper discernment.
Sure.
And yes, it forces us to go deeper. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got to be challenged. I have to allow myself to be challenged, to try to understand where you're coming from, why you're thinking, but you know, it's. I bring it again. What does the church teach? What is the gospel? What is the gospel message here? What is the church teaching? You know, and defer to that.
Mm-hmm.
To defer to that, and I don't know. It's
or like this progressive enlightened mentality that we've gone beyond God. We don't need God. We're better.
We're
our own God. Yeah, or we are our own gods.
I remember there was a group of radical sisters that basically said that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very radical feminist group of nuns. And they're dying. I mean, there's no young sisters there, but they're going to go to their grave defending their position, and their position is that we've gone beyond Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone beyond Jesus. Which is really, talk about a diabolical disorientation.
Yes.
How evil can complete, and St. Paul writes about that often, you know, especially to Timothy, be careful of those who come and tickle the ear. Mm-hmm. With all their fables and all their progressive, he says that, you know?
Yeah.
Be careful. Watch yourself. Hold firm to the truth. That means there is a truth. And that truth is is Jesus Christ. Jesus and his teachings, as he's entrusted that then to the apostles, who then develop if we want to talk about progression or an evolution, it's really a deepening, a deepened understanding of the gospel message. That's what the church has to safeguard and protect, you know, the deposit of faith, that nothing can be added, nothing can be taken away from what was handed on to us.
Right.
But yes, to be deepened. Armin, you're going to say something?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the word progressive. What does that mean? Progress to what? Progression away from God? What is the progression? Progressive is thought of in a connotative sense. Well, it's going forward. It must be better. But because something is progressive doesn't necessarily mean it's good.
No. Yes, so in many ways it seems a progression away from God, isn't it?
Yeah.
God is good. God is the perfect good. God is perfect love. God is truth. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And this is the only way, you know, through this life, it's through me, to the Father. Mm-hmm. But if we've progressed beyond Jesus, then is there any hope?
No, because we don't need him. He's not worth anything.
Well, we're out of time. And so we pray for this urgency, urgency to cleave to Christ,
yeah.
Know the gospel, know the teachings of the church, pray in humility, you know, defer all things to God, the God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And in this God, I bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Have a nice weekend. Ciao.
Amen.
Time to hide.